Hi, welcome back to a new episode of Shut Your Face. Yes, I have kind of changed some things around, but it's still just as cool. Anyhow, if you're not a member of our Patreon, what are you doing? It's really cool. So head over there and become a member so you can get early access. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and let us begin.
All right, so let's get into this. So you, my friend, are in Scotland.
Yeah, that's right. You're Edinburgh.
Yeah, and you don't do any boarding or training or anything like that. You do your own thing on the side. You show on the side, correct?
Yeah. I don't teach in anybody's horses or teach anybody as of yet. But it's something I'd like to do in the future.
Well, yeah, because that's how I found you was TikTok, and you do a little bit of help with people on TikTok, which I think is super cool.
Yeah,
because, you know, we talked about how people can be on social media as far as horses is concerned, and we can be, some of them non-horse people, and even horse people can be brutal.
Oh, they can be real critics. They like to have their opinions on their, they can be real critics on TikTok and social media platforms. They like to be harsh sometimes and leave some comments on how you do things, you should be doing something. They're quick to call them the TikTok fingers.
You know, I mean, I don't know, honestly, because, like, I remember we talked a little bit about how other sports don't get the same type of criticism as equine and agricultural related sports. And I think that's because there's a whole nother animal involved, and people get, you know, sometimes you gotta respect the care behind it, but some of it is just dumb. Like, some of them are just like, they refuse to want to learn what it actually is, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree.
What's the craziest TikTok trainer you had to deal with?
And they were like, "Your horse is so fat." And I was like, "Really? You're going to say that to me?" Well, my horse has been in the picture. She had finished her, like, her whole season out competing. So that's like 4 or 5 months out competing. And this person came on and she was like, "Yeah, your horse is too fat. You need to lose some weight. You need to have education on equine obesity and stuff like that." I was like, "This horse has been out competing all season. She is on. Yeah, she gets a hard feed. She gets fed. I always feed my horses as a reward, just, you know, in the morning and at night and even after they've worked. But this person is just point blank refusing to understand that the breed of my horse is very heavy. She's a heavy breed for her size. She's like a heavy pony. And this person just would not accept the fact that she had big bones and, you know, she was made for pulling carbs. So she's obviously going to be a little bit wider and a little bit leg in each corner sort of style. But, oh my gosh, yeah. That's probably the most recent one. I don't usually get ones of me criticizing my riding or criticizing things I do with my horses.
Yeah.
I don't really tend to post much of that. Like, I post videos of me riding and me at shows and stuff like that. I don't really usually get people criticizing that. It's usually just that's like probably the only one I've had this year, actually. It's the lady called the horse fat.
I remember seeing this one girl, and I don't know where she was. I don't know if she's in America or overseas, but she had a warm blood that was like 2 or 3, and he was in his growth spurt, and he literally just like shot up. And she was fighting comments of people saying, "Your horse is skinny and you need to feed your horse." And she kept trying to tell them, like, "Look, this horse eats. You need to understand that he is growing." Like, and it was in this really nice barn, and you're like, "People, do you not get it?"
Yeah, the other one is, like, if I'm on TikTok and I see say someone getting criticized for writing, and you can usually tell when they've just started writing or yeah. been novice. I usually jump in the comments and I'm like, look guys, like we've all been here. You were probably like this when you started riding. You know, nobody is the perfect rider. As soon as they got on a horse, we've all got to learn, and there's not one equestrian out there in the world that won't learn something else, if you know what I mean. Like, there's always something to learn with horses, because every horse is different. You're never right. going to get the exact same horse that's going to follow the rules that your last horse, that you know, the aids that you give your last horse. So it's kind of that sense of nobody's better than anybody else. Do you know what I mean? Like, we've all got to learn. And we all started, you know, we didn't look pretty. That's one of the things I like to do, is go in and say, look guys, like, we've all been here, stop making judgment. The only thing you can do is at least, like, say, oh my, you know, like, well done, you're doing great, or you're doing amazing, keep it up. Encouragement rather than criticism.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's like, you know, some of the stuff that you see happen on social, like, I'm glad that you do that, though. We need more people like you that advocate like that, because I agree with you 110%. It's like, really? You're gonna make fun of somebody who's...
Most of the time it's kids.
Yeah. There was this one, I remember this one TikTok that kind of went viral, or kind of like, I kept seeing it on my FYP, and this girl was posting how she fell off of her horse for the first time or whatever, and people were just running her through the mud. Like, horse girls were running her through the mud, and I was thinking, are y'all serious right now? Like, you know, why can't it be one of those can you not just kind of scroll past it and leave them alone? It's guts enough to even be on a horse, first of all, but second of all, the poor girl probably never ride again, because I mean, I think she deleted the video or whatever, but some of them can be rough being a horse girl.
I completely agree. And if it's not the criticism online, it's the criticism in person, people judging you and everything you do, trying to give you advice, and they've never done the advice that they're giving you.
Yep.
They've never done that before. So why would you take that advice from me?
Exactly. Now, what was something else that was funny that you said before? Not funny, but like interesting to me. Because it's like Americans, we have so many, I swear to God, so many horses are on supplements, they're on this, they're on grain, they're on this and this and this and that, which some of them do need it. There might be reason for need it. But you said over there, grass, you guys just do grass for the most part.
Yeah, but our horses, so you come to the UK and yeah, we have barns, we have stables, but the majority of horses here live in fields. You know, they live in like big herds and they live in fields. And I have my horses in overnight in the winter and then out during the day. And in the summer, they can, you know, weather dependent, I can bring them in overnight or bring them in during the day and put them out at night. It's kind of like a free, I don't know how to say it, like, it gives them free, you know, it's hard because even over here in the winter as well, like, the grass doesn't grow as well.
Yeah.
Because our temperatures reach, like, really low. So we have to feed hay as well. So it's kind of, it's obviously very different from America. And I remember you saying last time that there was a bit of a controversy about whether you should put your horses out or you should keep them in.
Oh, yeah. That is kind of a big controversy because there's so many variants to it. So, I mean, you have some people that have horses that literally just don't have the space. Like, they do not have the space. And then you have some places that are just very keen on it. They're big on it. It's just like race horses, and you go to those farms out in Kentucky and stuff like that. There, some of those horses stay out 24/7. And then you have other places that kind of do it. Like, we were raised, we would call it let them be horses. So let them out, let them be a horse, you know, and lucky enough we had, you know, grew up with space to do it. But it is a big controversy because some people are like, no, they need to stay up 24/7. Some are like this, some have to, some don't. So it's such a huge range of opinions related to that topic. Over here it is.
Yeah, I would say, like, the most controversy, like, the battle over here is kind of, like, barefoot or shod.
Really?
I don't know if that's like that over there or not.
No.
A lot of people have some great arguments on Facebook and stuff about whether your horse should be barefoot or they should have shoes on. And oh gosh, it's kind of crazy. That's the kind of crazy part of it. So yeah, like the turnout situation in America, the barefoot and the shoes situation over here is kind of similar.
I didn't know that because, see, well, we don't, so we do, obviously, we do more like Western related disciplines over here than you guys do, correct? You guys mainly do more, what did you say you called it? Working hunt seat, right?
Working hunter, yeah.
Yeah.
Like hunter jumpers, but a little bit more relaxed. Like, you don't need to go at a slow pace. You can go as fast as you like as long as you don't knock the jumps down. And then do like a little dressage test after it. To like show that your horse can go from like 100 miles per hour to back down to like 10. So it's like a balance in between that. Yeah.
I think that might be why there's not a controversy for farriers and shoes and stuff over here, because a lot of the Western disciplines require them to have shoes versus where the English disciplines probably don't, because like for like reiners is a perfect example. So reiners have to have sliders on their back feet in order to slide like they do. And so I don't know if that's it or if that's not it. It may not be. I don't know. I have no idea, but I didn't know that. Because do you not have corrective shoeing over there? Like if you have a horse that has...
Yeah, we have remedial farrier stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a lot of horses over here that have like pads and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And I think like there's certain in my competition like section, if your horse has like corrective shoeing,
uh-huh.
It's not allowed to compete.
Huh?
Yeah, it's but I know for my discipline, you're not allowed corrective shoeing.
That's so weird, because that means that would eliminate a lot of horses that have no other choice.
It's the same as like if your horse has got a splint. If the judge sees the horse has a splint, they won't look at your horse.
Oh wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Now, your discipline is the working hunter.
Yeah, it's working hunter showing. It's a little bit like, I always explain this to people that don't really understand. It's a little bit like dog showing.
We talked about this.
Yeah, it's like different breeds, different sections. So you could have, for my category, I have Welsh cobs. So the Welsh section D, so there's like 4 sections of the Welsh breed. And I compete in a section which is called Mountain Merlin, which is the sort of hill ponies, the native breeds of the UK. So you've got like the Dales pony, the Fell pony, the Connemara from Ireland. You have the Welsh cobs, you have the Welsh section ABCD. You have the Highland ponies, the Shetland ponies. There's lots of different breeds. And we all go into a ring together and compete to see which breed is the best or which horse is the best of that breed. So yeah, it's kind of, I explain it like dog showing, but it's kind of, I would say it's the most judgiest type of competition you can do with a horse, or like, if you hate being judged, don't do showing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it's great. It's pretty fun though. I mean, we all like to think our horses are picture perfect and they're like the best horse you've ever seen or the prettiest horse you've ever seen. So it's kind of, seeing if anybody else thinks that, in a sense. But it's also the I like to explain it as well, is that it's like you want to create this picture perfect image of a rider and a horse and just make everything seem effortless. You know, like your canter, your walk, your trot, even gallop. We have to show like a few strides of gallop and then bring them back to canter. And it's like to see that, that's what sort of inspired me to get into showing, was the example of this picture perfect image of perfection. It just looked amazing. It just it's very fancy. That's the way to see it. Very fancy thing to be doing with a horse.
But I think it's cool how over there the breeds compete against each other, whereas over here it's almost the exact opposite, because only that particular breed competes within itself. Like, and I think you said, what was the biggest show for you guys? We were talking about the Shire horses.
Yeah, Horse of the Year show. Yeah, that's the big one.
That is so cool to me.
Yeah. If you ever get the chance to go to the UK, go at the time of Horse of the Year show. It is amazing.
And they literally pull all the breeds together and do it just like a dog show. And that's cool. That's so cool to me, because I think it'd be cool if we did that over here just like once, to be able to like put them all together, because it's the opposite over here where, you know, you do have big shows where people with different breeds come and compete. But for the most part, you have breed clubs and you just compete within those clubs. And so that's crazy to me. I know we were looking up the Shire because you guys are mainly, you mainly have pony-related breeds, correct?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few. Like, some of the breeds over here are pretty endangered. Like, there's only so many in the world.
Really?
The Shire horse, that's an endangered breed, yeah. The Shire horse is an endangered breed. The Highland ponies are an endangered breed. The Suffolk Punch, the Cleveland Bays. There's a lot of breeds that are endangered, that are native to the UK. But the I think the showing sort of side of it as well is like they bring out these stallions, these beautiful big stallions of each breed, to sort of raise the price of their stud fee, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah,
to say, oh my god, this stallion's won this, so let's put a bigger price on it. I think it's the same over in America. You know, they'll go out and compete to increase the stud fee and stuff like that, and get some rosettes under or ribbons under the stallion's belt, just to increase their value. But yeah, it's kind of crazy.
That's cool, because you know, whereas over here you do have studs that compete to elevate their worth, yes, but sometimes their offspring is what makes them more worthy. So, you know, you have some that do believe in showing them and getting all that stuff underneath their belt, but then you have others that don't necessarily do it, which is crazy to me. But okay, so now I wanted to ask you about this. Back to the whole mainly eating grass thing. I remember you talking about how we have so many different hays over here, and you guys just have grass, but you don't have, but you said you do have hay, right?
Yeah, we do have hay. Basically, I know you guys have like alfalfa.
Yeah.
So this is kind of weird, because I was thinking about this after our last talk, and do you know like how you guys would feed like grain and stuff to your horses?
Yeah.
So we actually feed like chopped up alfalfa as part of their like feed,
then
feed hay separately. So it's not like they don't get alfalfa straight. They get it mixed in with like balancers and vitamins and minerals and stuff like that.
Oh.
And then the hay that we make over here is just like a mixture of all types of grass seeds. So it's not like a particular grass seed, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool. I'm actually going to need to send you a picture of what like the bags of alfalfa here. Because it's kind of crazy. Like, the alfalfa I see, you guys see, is completely different to the stuff we get here.
Yeah, send me a picture of it, because I want to look at it. Because you're right, we do have, you do see people talk about different hays. You have your basic orchard grass, and then you have, well, I mean, if they're pregnant, they can't be on orchard grass. You have Timothy hay, you have or Bermuda coastal, you have, and then the alfalfa. Yeah, that is crazy, because we do pretty much only feed, like your typical horse person is just going to feed their horse a basic grain and they're going to eat a forage. But you do have some people that do feed alfalfa. We have what you call alfalfa cubes, and you have to soak them. Some people give them just as a cube, but we were told to soak ours and then add it. But we only did that if the horse was older. We didn't, luckily, we didn't have to do it except when we had one horse get older.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's so interesting because their horse's diet, like from hog feed, is really different as well. There's a lot of people in the UK that.
What do you call it?
Beet pulp?
Yeah, we've fed that before.
Yeah, they have. A lot of people feed it over here, but it's unmolasses.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
A lot of feeds over here, they aspire to have like an unmolasses, like sugar-free, high-fiber, low-calorie. So it's really like hardcore stuff. Like they go right into like science and stuff with the feeds over here. It's kind of crazy.
That is probably good though, because you know I think if you actually look at wild ponies and you think to yourself, okay. Well, they don't get none of this other extra stuff that we give ours, like domesticated horses. And you think, okay, well, how come they're able to survive, but ours have problems? That is a pretty big discussion. It's almost like too much will cause issues.
Yeah, because it branches out to other things as well. Like you could branch feed out to obesity or like laminitis and stuff like that. You can go into a whole new depth.
Yeah. 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 Do you guys have problems with colic over there?
So, yeah, I have a mare and she colics once a year, and it's always once a year in springtime. And it's when the weather over here in Scotland, one day it's raining, the next day it's like really sunny. So our seasons change dramatically. And when that happens, my mare, she likes to gear us all with a gas colic, so it's a nice little bit of them. But I think there is a lot of colic cases. I would say laminitis is more of a problem here than colic, I would say.
Oh, really? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I don't think the grass situation as well. A lot of horses are on grass, a lot of sugar in the grass here. So I think it's more common than horses that are turned out a lot on a large area with a lot of grass and not doing, you know, not active.
Yeah.
That's a huge factor in it, but even some horses, it's just, you look and you think, yeah, you're going really, you know, you look really well, but how have you got laminitis? And yeah, this is just, it's crazy. The laminitis situation here. There's a lot of talk about it, and equine grass sickness. That's another one that sort of rings alarm bells here as well. And if you guys ever had that over there.
Well, I mean, it's over here. You have it over here. Horses do get it, but it's not as big of an issue. Like, it's not made out to be that big of a thing where a lot, you don't actually see a lot of people talking about it. So, which I guess that's a good thing, but we then again don't have the same weather in countryside as you guys have. I feel like the grass over there is probably richer than it is over here.
Yeah.
I don't know though.
Like green grass. Everywhere you look is green.
Yeah. Whereas over here, it's like you have so many different parts of the country that, you know, places that just don't have grass at all. And then you have different variations of places. Oh, you got a podcast starting, don't you?
No. So I was featuring on another podcast, which was like a UK-based one.
Oh, cool.
It was a girl that I met on TikTok, and she had started up her one.
Oh, for some reason I thought you said you were going to do yours. Oh, okay, that's not it. Hold on a second. Let me pull out these other notes. We talked about something else that was hilarious, and I know I wrote it down, so hold on a second. Oh, The breaking yards. Isn't that what it's called?
Breaker's yard.
That's it. What? Okay. Explain what that is, because that's not over here.
A breaker's yard is somewhere people would send their horses to be broken into ride. There's a job. It's a paid job. People have a barn and they would take in horses, other people's horses, for say 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Train them up and then give them back to the owner.
Now they don't train them in full; they just break them.
Yeah, they break them into ride, walk, trot, canter, and then give them back.
It's just as simple as that. That's so crazy to me.
And they get paid for it.
Right. So, because we were talking about how you bought you have your one mare, but then you also bought a filly, correct?
Yeah, I bought a bunch of ten months old, really well bred, Section B filly. She's going to be a good one, I think. She's going to be a good one. She's very, very level headed. She's been here before. She knows what she's doing.
Well, yeah, and you said you had to send her to a breaker yard.
But this is the thing, I want to try it myself. This will be the first ever horse that I break to ride.
Oh, that's right. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yes, you were talking about it, but, okay.
Yeah, if I can't break to ride myself, I'm not going to have any shame in asking for some help. Just so I know things are done correctly. But I do want the best possible start for a young horse. She has had a great, I do a lot of in-hand stuff with her. I wouldn't say natural horsemanship, but more learning voice commands, learning to stand, all these things. Letting her see the world as well. So yeah, that's what I've been doing with my young filly.
I think it is cool to be able to be there as the owner and the rider from literally start to finish. Because some people just, breed them, buy them, never touch them, send them to somebody else, and they have problems later on. If you're not a part of the process, at least 50%, if not more, it's going to be harder on you versus just letting somebody else do it. Because it's not like you're hiring somebody to paint your outhouse. I mean, you're hiring somebody to help with training your animal that you're going to be dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have a lot of natural horsemanship stuff out there.
So I think we talked about this the last time. And I was live on TikTok a few days ago speaking to someone who trains a lot of rodeo stuff. And it's really interesting because over here, the Scottish Western Equestrian Society, my friend, she's actually the chairman for it, and it is not popular. It is really not popular, and I don't understand why. Because if more people saw the way, I admire the way Western people ride and how they train their horses.
Yeah.
Because those training methods. I mean, my friend came up and gave me some help when I've been stuck, and she's like, "Erin, you're gonna laugh at me." And she calls it, "You're gonna laugh at me because I'm gonna teach you some funky Western stuff." That's what she calls it. Because other people here would be like, "Western? What do you mean Western? We don't ride Western here. We ride English." And so yeah, she came up and taught me, and it was the only thing that she taught me was how to lengthen my horse's neck and get his head a little bit lower on, to stretch his neck out. And oh my gosh, that was like instantly click. Me and my horse clicked. And ever since that day, I've never had to fight. You see a lot of riders. This is another thing we actually spoke about, was how the Westerners are so light with their hands.
Yeah.
You see little to no contact between the bit and the reins. And over here, in English riding, you see them hanging on for dear life. I just admired that you could get your horse into that shape without any force. And it's just, when she taught me that, I was just like, how simple and effective is that training method? Like, why can't that be incorporated into English riding? Because it would help so many riders learn that you don't need to hold on for dear life. You can push your horse.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. Because, well, that's crazy that you think that that is different. Because I would have thought that the English discipline would have used that, like you were talking about, like collecting their neck and having like more control over their head. I would think that's how they would get to that point, but they don't. Is that what you're saying? That's crazy to me.
You see a lot of horses. I personally have seen a lot of horses, and in the showing aspect of it, they use a lot of, I don't know if you guys have over there, side reins.
Yeah.
Where you would put side reins on just so the horse would have its neck in, make it look pretty. And it's not, you know, yes, it looks pretty, but it's not effective. And a lot of people use draw reins,
yeah.
Side reins, standing martingales. Which is a martingale that just attaches straight onto the noseband so the horse can't put its head up. Yeah, there's a lot of things over here that scream. I use this as a quick fix. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I use it as a quick fix and not actually dug into it and really tried to get it correct. So it's quite.
That's like the noseband you were.
Like that.
It is, no, because like that noseband that you were just talking about, that's such a touchy subject because it's either one side or the other. The person actually knows what they're doing with it or the other person doesn't. And it's like, you know, you could hurt yourself and a horse big time if you don't know what you're doing with that, you know, a tie down. Yeah, I didn't know you guys had that over there. So what do you guys have any crazy stuff when it comes to spurs?
No, actually, I think like spurs is kind of, I know in my section of competing, we're not allowed to use spurs, but people
really
like horses, yeah, they're allowed to use spurs, but they're almost like for show, not really like used.
Yeah.
Because these horses, as soon as like, it'll be like the western, the quarter horses, as soon as you shift your weight, the horse goes up to canter, or lope. So, yeah, I think I have used them as a training aspect. Like if I'm wanting to move my horse over my leg, to move away from it, just my inside leg, so if I'm pushing her over, I'll use them, but I'll then take them off. So then she knows that she doesn't need to rely on the spurs. It's only the aid of the leg that she needs to rely on. Like the pressure.
Yeah.
But I think I would say I see them more as a training than a way of going, because I know a lot of people just use, like, a lot of show jumpers and stuff here, spurs all the time. You'll never see them ride without spurs. And the same with, like, cocks and stuff like that. A lot of people ride with, like, whips here. I don't ride with a whip. It's like, it's kind of. Yeah, there's so many different things that you can compare. It's unbelievable.
But they don't. So you don't use it because you don't need it, but the other people ride with it just as like a prop. They don't really use it.
I don't know. I don't know if they feel like they might need it or if they actually do need it. So it's kind of like, yeah, it's, you don't know whether they do need it or they don't need it. I know when I'm competing, we always have one for show. And it's not even an effective riding prop. The one that I have is like a deer horn on top and like woven leather. And it's just for show. But you see some people schooling and they've got these big fancy long schooling whips or they've got these jumping bats or, you know, and you kind of think to yourself, do you really need that? Or are you just having it as like, a support thing, or like, do you having it there because you really need it?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. Because it's like, it's, yeah, the same thing can be said over here as far as like Spurs are concerned. Because you do have some people that kind of just have them on just to have them on, and they don't actually use them as an aid. But then you have some people that do know how to use them and use them properly. But I think that just kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, like the inability to want to actually learn. Because, you know, I love horse people. I'm a horse person myself. But we can be very stubborn when it comes to certain things. Like some of the arguments you see, like that one lady telling you your horse is fat, and you're like, no, she's not. Like, people will literally argue with you over fact. And it's like, what?
And it's like, some of the stuff, like, someone will post a, say, the one thing here, and this is, like, a UK thing, and I don't know if it's like this in America or not, but see if, like, a horse poops on the road.
Yeah.
People go crazy about it.
Really?
They'll post on Facebook, like, oh my gosh, someone's horse is pooped on the road, like, can someone please come pick this up, like,
no, I don't know. They don't get like that over here. They'll just like know that, no, it's not like that over here. Now, if it's a parade, you usually have somebody come behind them and clean it up, but it's not like, that's kind of different. That's not like just normal driving.
Yeah, I think over here, because we're our barns are situated, like, we have no other option to go out of them, because we don't really have right-of-ways. Things aren't accessible.
Oh.
Usually you'll see people like hitching up the trailers and going down the beach or going to a woods or something like that. But it's, you know, where we are, you have to go on roads to get to these kind of places as well. Mm-hmm. If you want to go out on a trail or anything like that. So yeah, it's kind of hard. And you meet a lot of traffic, and
Think about something. Do you guys have like big, massive horse trailers with living quarters over there?
Yeah. So what I have is you call it a lorry. I don't know if you guys call it like a truck. And it's a rig, a lorry.
Okay. Yeah. They use the word rig. I thought you said something else. Yeah. We use the word rig, and then truck, we just say truck.
Yeah. So it's like, you drive it.
Yeah.
There's no trailer attached on the back or anything like that. And like a ramp comes in the back, and you've got the horses in the back part, and then you've got your living area. So it's like a motorhome in the front, and then the horse like area in the back.
Oh, cool.
With like your pack walkers and stuff on the side.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we have. Or they have like, a lot of people are like, I love the trailers, the floats in America. But the trailers here are so pathetic. Like, they don't have any living quarters. It's just like two horses can get in it, and it's like they're side by side and they're facing the way you're driving.
Oh, like a bumper pole.
Yeah.
No, we have those over here. I started off with a bumper pole. There's nothing wrong with a bumper pole, but that's crazy that you guys don't have, like, we have, you know, what you would call your typical living quarters, like a gooseneck.
You're the real fan.
That's crazy. You got to send me a picture of the ones that you got over there, because I want to see it.
Yeah.
I think that's cool that it's different like that, because I don't know. I just think that's cool. Do you think that you guys are kind of like that because it's to stay more traditional with European horse relationship? Because it's traditionally more English. Do you think that it's kind of why it stayed the way that it stayed?
I don't know. I mean, the roads are really different here.
Yeah.
It's a lot, like, if you have a long vehicle, it's quite hard because a lot of the roads here are very windy, very narrow. It's kind of hard to have that long, wide vehicle to, you know, to pull along a long trailer, a wide trailer. So it's kind of, and even the tractors and stuff, like the agricultural side over here, you see a tractor coming along the road and you have to pull over to the side because these machines are so big and our roads are so narrow. I think that's probably
it
as well.
Yeah, that's probably it. Just the general, like, location of where it is. Yeah, because you have almost another half of a road on the other side of roads to where you can pull off. I don't want to say sidewalks, but you have area on the side of most highways where you have room. That's so cool to learn this stuff. Because if you don't talk to anybody that lives over there, you're like, you don't know that it exists the way that it exists.
Yeah, definitely. I enjoy learning about other people's, like, especially the horsey stuff. I love learning about how they look after the horses, or, you know, how they get to the horseshoes, or how their horseshoes are run. I know Australia is completely, like, different from America and the UK. They take things so seriously, and their management is so different.
They are. I don't know. I've had a couple of conversations with people that are from Australia, and it is kind of cool. I think it's cool that they don't have sales tax, because it was hilarious, because he broke horses. This one particular guy broke horses down there in Australia and then moved to North Carolina. And he told me about this specific story where he went to the store and he went to go buy milk, and the price was like whatever it was, like, I don't remember what he said, like $2.99 or whatever. So he goes to the register and it's $2.99. He goes, no, it ends up being like three something, whatever, with the sales tax. They don't have sales tax down there, which is wild to me. Yeah. You have sales tax, right?
I think so. Like tax,
yeah. Yeah, like extra tax when you go buy something. It's like down there, they don't have that. But you're all right, because Australia, you have the National Cutting Horse Association of Australia. You have Rainers down there. I know Paint and Quarter Horses down there. And
well, they do the same discipline that I do. They have that over there, but it's just so strict. Like,
oh, cool.
So for instance here, we have to show our horses as naturally as possible. Like, if they've got a scar, you can't cover that. You can't add an extra sock, or you can't cover a sock. Whereas in Australia, those guys paint socks on, or they paint, like, stars on their horses, like, on their heads. It is crazy.
Are you serious? Did you just say, like, add socks or take socks off?
Yeah, I'm being serious. That's what they do.
Oh, my gosh.
For this, like, image that I was talking about. They put makeup on their horses, and,
That's actually kind of, I mean, I would have fun doing that, actually, but
I'm going to have to try and find somebody to speak to from Australia that does the same sort of thing I do.
Yeah.
And get them to explain something that they do.
You should, I want to talk to them too, because I think it would be interesting as hell, because, like, you know, we have, okay, so do you guys have fake tails over there, like we have over here?
We have fake tails, yeah.
Okay, so you do, okay.
Yeah, they'll mark you down for it if they can see it. But we're not allowed fake tails in like our native breeds. We have to be shown as naturally as possible.
That's so crazy to me, because you are right. We're not as bad as Australia, nowhere near as bad as Australia. But you do have, you know, the fake tails. You have people that do. I have seen, there's more. I think Americans do more of an enhancement. So you'll see people whiten white socks or black hooves.
Yeah, that's what I do.
But you're saying in Australia, they will actually just add a whole nother sock.
They will add a whole sock. They will add stars on their face. They will, like, apply black makeup to the horse's muzzle, their eyes. It is, like, they take it so seriously. And the thing is, it looks amazing. If I was to go there, every horse looks the same. They all look amazing, and they all look perfect, and it's, like, so hard to see which horse looks
you just made me think about something. Is that not something that would need to be regulated? Because how would you, I mean, as far as, well, I wonder if they do like breed registration or horse registration, like we do registration, because some breeds like Appaloosa or Paint, you literally are registering them by the market, the natural markings on their body. So I wonder if that isn't like up in the air on how that's handled.
This is like another topic. So we have it over here as well. And like, say you have a crossbreed.
Yeah.
Over here, you would have a lot of breeds that were crossed with Arabs. They have this special breed called a British riding pony. And usually we would categorize it as a show pony, which would be this elegant pony that moves and looks like a miniature version of a dressage horse. And it's all these different crossbreeds. So the regulations, so like the standards for it, I don't know if they have their own like body, like their own registration place, but I know they have like height restrictions and stuff like that for like whatever height the horse is to be. The classes, like the actual best classes they have here, is all about like they're all different colors. None of them are the same. None of them look the same. It can be any breed. It's just a category. So they have that. What would be like in Australia? So you won't really need to be registered. Like the pony won't need to be a registered breed. Like it won't need to be a purebred. It can be a purebred, or it can be like five things over purebred. You know what I mean? It's kind of crazy. That brings us to the topic again of like, it's not breed show. Like there's so many different types of horses here that compete in this one big show.
I still think that's so cool that you have a competition of the breeds.
Yeah, there's so many different, and like, so I have a part-bred Arab Twinkle, who's like the crazy one on my TikTok. He's a part-bred, he's Arab thoroughbred and Welsh. We don't know which part. Like,
oh wow.
And so yeah, he's kind of, you have to. Very, very hot-headed, intelligent, crazy breeds of put them into one. And out came this very intelligent, very naughty, very spicy little Arabian.
Well, Arabs were actually the first. I mean, Arabian was actually like the first technically quarter horse. They're really smart, actually. I don't know where they got the bad rep of being crazy, but they're very. This actually a very smart breed. I don't think they get enough credit.
I think the crazy part comes from they're way too intelligent. Like,
yeah.
Twinkle knows exactly what's coming next, and it's kind of like, did you really have to try and give me that when I asked for something else? Like, I'm going to ask that in a minute. Like, if I'm asking him to go into canter, he'll know before I ask him to go to canter. He'll be like, okay, I'll give you your shit up there.
But and then now Welsh. Don't you have, okay, don't you have two Welshes? Don't you have a Welsh pony and then the Welsh cob, or are they just both ponies?
So they're both, yeah, so the Welsh cob, they don't have an upper height restriction. And a lot of the native breeds, the mountain merlin breeds here in the UK, have a height restriction. And the Welsh cob is the only one that doesn't have a height restriction, I think. And so, yeah, they're classed as ponies just now because they're 14, one of them 14 hands, and my youngster, she's like 42, but I think she's going to reach like 15 hands.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, that's kind of like the height restriction here.
Okay, because I remember we talked about this a little bit, because you have a lot more pony breeds over there versus where over here we have more horses that are considered horses, which is whatever 14-2 and over, because this is the same thing over there. Once they hit 14-2, they're considered a horse, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's crazy to me. That's so cool.
Yeah, it's kind of mad. It's kind of, yeah, there's a lot of ponies. I think that, I would actually say, like, if you went to a horse show here, you would mainly see 14 hands. Like, I think that's like roughly the height of most of the ponies and stuff around here, is just 14 hands. But, like, if you were to buy a horse, there's a lot of 14 hand ponies and stuff for sale. There's a lot of horses as well, but you just really don't see them compete here.
You just made me think about something. You said that you guys, so for fun, what do you guys consider for fun on horses? You just like, can you go ride on any beach, or do you have any beach restrictions? Because over here, you have beach restrictions. You have certain beaches that won't allow horses. You have certain beaches that only have them during a certain amount of time.
So over here, it's like free to roam. You can go really
Really?
Find property, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like that over here. Yeah. Like you have...
Any beach you can go ride. It doesn't matter, yeah.
No, yeah, it's not like that over here. Like you have certain areas that have restrictions. Just like hunting is concerned, you'll have certain like time frames where you can go or can't go on it, or certain places won't let you have horses, because you do have areas, I know here in North Carolina, I don't know about other places, where we have wild ponies that are already on the beaches, so, and you can't touch them, they won't let you touch them or do anything with them, which is probably a good thing.
Wait, you got some wild ponies on beaches?
Yeah, you didn't know this?
No, that's crazy.
I might have to send you a picture of it. Yeah, they're called the, and actually, well, two of them, the ones on North Carolina are called, I don't want to say it wrong, so I'm going to Google it to make sure that I say it right. I think they're called Corolla ponies, or the, Corolla, North Carolina, beach, horses. Yeah, the wild horses. Corolla Beach. Yeah, Corolla Wild Horses. That's what they're called. They're on the Outer Banks. And then you also have, like, you know, you remember that book? You probably, every horse girl read that book about the Chesapeake ponies, Misty.
Oh, I think you did.
You did? I swear to God, every horse girl knows that book or read that book. I kept probably saying it wrong. Chesapeake or Chesapeake ponies or whatever. That's not how you say that, Brie. You idiot. Hold on a second. Chincoteague. I'm saying it wrong. The Chincoteague pony. It was from a novel, but they actually do exist. And those are, they're on the East Coast. I just can't remember which part of the East Coast that they're on. Hold on. Yeah, Virginia, Maryland. They're not far from North Carolina. That's where I am, North Carolina. But those still exist. But they still, I think, I could be mistaken, but I think they actually have, like, a vet or a group of people that's dedicated to, like, checking on them. So they're ultimately left wild for the most part. But, like, if they see one that's injured or if they have one that's pregnant, they have a vet that, like, goes in and tends to them, I believe. But they try to keep it very...
That's like, you. Like, where I stay, we have, like, this huge hill that just sits in the middle of nowhere. And it's, like, it used to be a volcano. It was, like, a plug volcano now. But it's, like, it sits on this... And all the land around it's flat, and then there's just one, like, mountain, we call it a wall, and there's wild extra ponies up there, and it's like they graze the hill to keep it like from being over, like,
yeah,
like overgrown.
Yeah,
because a lot of people walk up there, and it's actually owned by like the council, like the people that sort of run the county. It's crazy, and they're sterile as well. But as you say, like if they need something done, you know, the vet will come in. So they've got a whole team that looks after them. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool, because I think it's like, it's so weird because you have so many arguments in the horse world, just like you guys do. We all have these arguments. But if you look at the wild ponies and you're like, okay, well, they can survive with nobody bothering them. Why the hell can't my horse with bubble wrap survive?
And then some Karen's on faces like,
right.
Can I run my horse? Is it going to be too cold?
Right.
Am I looking enough?
Oh my God, do you have the blanket disagreement? Do you have, because that can be a thing over here too, where people are like, no, you shouldn't blanket your horses, or yes, you should. That's a big disagreement over here too. Do you guys have that?
No, what we have to do, like, the blanket situation is, if we, I don't know if you guys, like, if the horses over there grow, like, a really thick winter coat.
Yeah, yeah, they can. Yes, they do.
Yeah, we have to clip. Like, you see a lot of the horses over here at the time, you get to clip. So, blanketing them is, like, something we have to do regularly, and especially with weather and stuff like that. It's raining, it's always raining in Scotland at one point. So, you know, we'll have, like, rain sheets or, like, right now, my guy, my horses are in, I think the critical, the old guy, he's in 350 grams of rug. He's clipped as well.
Oh, wow.
But it's like, it's so weird because the climate here is like 1 minute it's warm, the next minute it's cold. Like, right now it's over here in Celsius, like maybe 7 Celsius. And then next week it's going to like -4. And it's like,
I think that, well, that's probably one of the biggest things with the whole blanketing thing over here is that if it could cause problems if you don't watch it or understand what to do with it, just like with what you're saying. Because, you know, if it does, if your weather does change drastically, then you have to make sure you accommodate the horse to that. You know what I mean? Like, if you've got them clipped and it's 32 degrees outside, they obviously don't have their natural coat, so you need to put a blanket on them. I mean, and some people get knocked out, drag out fights about that over here. Yeah, yeah, like, it's a big thing. Because they'll blame it, like what I just said, like, they'll... So, normally, the weather doesn't really change that drastically at any given spot in the United States. You might have some places that do that, but for the most part, you have your basic seasons. So it's, you know, and most things stay within range, but most horse people are kind of like what you just said. So, you know, if you wake up one day and it's sunny and 70, well, obviously they don't need a blanket. Well, the next day, if it drops all the way down to 30, just drastic change, well, more than likely, I would put a blanket on my horse if that was me. You know, most people would kind of agree with that basic understanding. But some people get in, because their whole, like, argument is the horse has a natural, they're not cold. Just because we're cold, they'll say they're not cold because they are made to be able to withstand the weather. And it's bothering them by putting the blankets on them. What is your weather range? What, like, what's the hottest that it gets and the coldest that it gets?
The coldest, let me check what Fahrenheit it would be. The coldest that I've had it here.
Oh, you only do, that's right, you only do Celsius. How cool. This is so, that's so cool. You don't realize, like, it's cool to me because you don't realize, like.
Okay, so the coldest is 14 Fahrenheit.
What is that in Celsius?
-10.
Oh, wow.
And the warmest, it's warm.
It's gotten colder over here in certain areas, depending on where you're at. You can go negative.
77 Fahrenheit, which is 25 degrees here. That's like the warmest I've kind of.
Really? Oh, my God. Our summers can get up to 100 degrees in certain places. Plus 100, 110, yeah.
Where is that? I'm going to a holiday there.
Right. Well, certain places in the Midwest, I mean, the East Coast could definitely get up to 80s, 90s, 100 for sure. I've seen it before. But Midwest and even out towards the desert, not necessarily the Pacific coast, but kind of in between, those places can get, you know, way plus 100, 110, 115. But you have different types of heats too. So, you know, you have dry heats and then different types of heats on kind of where you're at. But at coldest, there are definitely places that can go below negative Fahrenheit, like negative 10, negative 15.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So your seasons must be like bang on. Like if you get a winter, you get winter.
Well, I'm in North Carolina, so our winters are kind of different. But in various places throughout the United States, yes, you could have, I'm going to say mid East Coast probably gets the best part of all seasons for the most part. So our summers are pretty summery. They could get up to 90 to 100. Our winters, we've had snow, we've had ice, we've had that type of weather. But the more north you go, like New York, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, they get big, big winters. You know, Michigan, they get big winters. Places up there get big winters. And then you have places like Florida, Texas, Mississippi. They don't really get winter. They definitely get hotter summers.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, we get like four seasons in one day. So. No, I'm being serious. I'm being serious. I've seen a snow 1 minute and then freeze and then come. It is like, it's crazy, crazy. And then our winters, you would associate Scotland with being like snowy and stuff like that, but right now, it's just rain, rain, rain. That's all we get is rain.
That's how I envision Scotland, rainy.
Yeah. All people would say, it's very, like, snowy and almost, like, nature, like.
Yeah.
No, it's rain. It's rain, wind. Like, right now, we've got 50 mile per hour wind. So it's, like, storm weather. So that's, like, the normal.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, no, that's not too bad. That's not that bad. But that is very interesting to hear. Like, it to me, it's cool to learn, like, what I think is normal is completely different to somebody else. And it's just cool to kind of hear how other people live, you know? Because when am I ever going to make it to the United Kingdom? I'm going to call you, though, if I do. Hell yeah, and I want to go to the breaker's yard. I got to check this joint out. That is so cool.